Hey team, welcome back to the show. Today it is Coach Andrea and myself, and we're going to be getting into the complete guide to core training for both performance and aesthetics. I'm really excited to get into this topic because almost everyone that works with us wants abs. And I think like, how do we go about getting abs to most people is just such a mysterious thing. You'll hear a lot of times people saying, abs are made in the kitchen, right? And your nutrition is a very important part of this. No matter how much we build up our ab muscles, we need to be lean enough to actually be able to see them. Most of us hold a good amount of fat on our midsection. So for a lot of people, yes, like really having visible abs, a big part of that is going to be being lean enough. But I also think that people underplay the importance of proper ab training because just like anything else, right? I mean, that's the same. I would, to a smaller degree, yes. But we could also say like glutes are made in the kitchen, right? Like once you get lean enough, you'll see, yes, like maybe we could see more of your glute muscle, but still if you don't have any glute muscle there, we're still not going to be happy with the outcome. And again, like I think that's kind of over-exaggerated. I would say absolutely, like we're going to need to spend a lot more time focusing on our glute training. That's going to take a lot more volume, a lot more total movements, but still, like building that muscle does make a difference here. And proper ab training, the biggest thing though is like most people butcher their ab training and just have a poor misconception of going about it. So understand, like, or maybe you just don't do it at all, right? So understand that proper ab training, yes, it's important for aesthetics, right? So if we build up the ab muscle to be bigger, again, a larger muscle will be more visible. And even at higher body fats, body fat percentages, we will have like more visible abs. So within that, again, like from the aesthetic side of things, that could be helpful, might not. Because I feel like for most people, when they're trying to gauge how lean am I, they basically, or how lean is someone else, we basically just look at their abs, right? So again, taking the time to train the muscle correctly and thus stimulating growth there will make having more visible abs easier at higher body fat percentages. But also when we're talking about ab training, again, I think we also have to understand your core really has several different functions. It's not only important for the aesthetic side of things, again, like having visible abs, but also for stabilizing your spine, stabilizing your pelvis, preventing things like back injuries, right? It's such an important part. Having a strong core is such an important part of, first, like having a resilient body to where you're not hurting yourself within your training, but also like that foundation for things like your glute training, for example. There are so many movements where, again, we are going to really be loading our spine, or we are going to really need to be able to stabilize our pelvis to push close to failure. And if our core strength isn't in a good place to do so, then that could be the rate limiter for like your glute training, your ability to build those muscles. And we could say the same thing on some movements for quads, right? So as a whole, not just for aesthetics, but also for performance, a proper training here is very important. Before we get into the core anatomy, Coach Andy, anything to add there?
I mean, yeah, it seems like people kind of tend to fall into either extreme where they just don't train abs at all, or they have like a whole ab day where everything's just kind of like ineffective ab training, that where you're just like trying to feel a burn in your abs. So I think this will be really helpful because you can look at what is the function that I'm going for here, and then train it appropriately to get the outcome that you want from these. So
absolutely. So in today's podcast, we're going to be talking through, first, just helping you understand some core anatomy and basically the functions of these different muscles, how to train them properly, our favorite movements for training each of these different core muscles for, again, both aesthetics and performance, and then working through some common questions and mistakes, like how often do we need to directly train our abs? Do we need to train all these different functions of our abs? How many sets and how much volume do we need to do? And again, some other common core training mistakes. So first, let's get into some core anatomy. Because again, I really think understanding the function and how these different muscles operate is so important for training them properly. So again, what we think of as your ab muscles or your core muscles is really a group of different muscles with different functions within your core. So the primary muscle groups we consider when we're programming for clients are going to be, first, the rectus abdominis. So this is what you probably think of as your six-pack muscle. This is typically the muscle of the abs is going to be the most visible and the most important for the aesthetic look of the abs. So if you look at your abs, this is basically what you see, right? This is like, again, those six bumps that are protruding from the front of your stomach. It's basically going to be like the outermost layer of your abs. Your abs almost have like 2 to 3 layers that are like different sheaths, or like a snake skin with like 3 different layers, right? And within these muscles, or within these layers, like the outermost layer, that's again protruding through your body fat the most on the front of your stomach, is going to be the rectus abdominis. Next, we have the obliques, both internal and external. Now, we can kind of think of these as almost like your quote unquote side abs. So again, obliques, just muscles on the either side of your core, below your rib cage, and going basically underneath your pelvis on the side of your hip bones, like underneath the iliac crest. These are very important, again, for core stability, and can also play a role in the aesthetic appearance of the abs. Typically, people aren't as nearly as focused on these as like your rectus abdominis. And some people actually try to avoid training their obliques too much because they think it'll make their waist blocky. I really think that like someone with well-developed obliques, their core looks so impressive, but it's so rare because people just typically don't train their obliques very much. And then finally, we have the transverse abdominis, or often called the TVA. This is often thought of as the deep core. This muscle isn't visible to the naked eye, but is very important to core stability / protecting your spine. So again, for aesthetics and performance, we need both, right? The rectus abdominis being well-developed to an extent, I would say not nearly as important, but to an extent, your obliques being well-developed, that will really have a play a big role in the aesthetic side of things. But also those obliques and your TVA being strong will play a huge role in stability. And again, us being able to do things like lift heavy loads and stabilize our spine and stabilize our pelvis, right? And as a whole, again, that's going to be such a big part of strength, that internal, the pressure we're able to create within our core. And again, the stability here for movements like deadlifts, squat variations, again, like our ability to stabilize there is so important for, again, keeping tension on the muscle and preventing us from like injuring our back or something of the sort. Before we get into training the rectus abdominis, anything else that you wanted to add?
I really don't think so here. I think we can move on to training those.
Okay. So first, let's talk through, we're going to talk through how we train each of these properly. And we're going to start with the rectus abdominis. So the primary function of your rectus abdominis is going to be spinal flexion. So basically think pulling your rib cage closer to your abs, or really think rounding your spine. This means that to effectively train the rectus abdominis, we need to actually be pulling the ribcage and pelvis closer together and should experience some rounding in the lower back. That's the only way for us to shorten and lengthen the tissue, right? So anytime we're training a muscle, we really, again, need to think about what is the function of said muscle in order to train it properly, right? So the biggest thing I think for a lot of, so many people are used to like, just, hey, like never round your back, always thinking that's a bad thing, that they actually struggle to do this here. But here again, like if you think of like the super rounded back deadlifts where people are just so hunched over and it's like, oh my gosh, this looks terrible. Like that's kind of where we should be at the end of a crunch position, right? Like the closer we can get our pelvis to our rib cage, the better, for really shortening that tissue. And then it's again, like moving through that kind of going to neutral to slightly extended spine to that flexed, or again, kind of crunched over a rounded back. That's how we really train this tissue. So because again, to really train the rectus abdominis well, we need to basically be pulling the rib cage as close to the pelvis as possible. And again, like going from like flexing to extending. So like back to neutral, pulling them apart and back together, apart and back together. That's how we train that. This also means that static exercises, so for example, like a plank, will do very little to actually build our six-pack muscles because we're not actively lengthening or shortening the tissue. First, the rectus abdominis, well, it does help here. It doesn't play as big of a role in less more of a stability movement. But alongside that, again, we're just not shortening and lengthening the tissue, right? It's just an isometric hold, so it's not going to do nearly as much.
Yeah, it's like if you were to just hold a dumbbell out to your side, you're not really flexing anything. Like you're going to feel a burn and work right. A little bit, but you're not going to be going through that stretch and yeah.
Right. Now the fibers of the rectus abdominis essentially run straight up and down, and we don't need to think about this too much. But again, if we look at, again, the direction those fibers run, they basically just run straight up and down. So training them is simple. We're essentially just going to need to crunch straight down or pull our pelvis straight up. So basically just pull our rib cage towards our pelvis or pull our pelvis towards our rib cage, in order to train them, right? Whereas opposed to, like, if you think about the lat muscles, they're more like fan shaped and they kind of arc around our around our rib cage. So there it's again like the like arm coming across the body where that gets a little bit more complex. Here it's basically we just need a crunch, right? So basically our training for the rectus abdominis will be crunch and reverse crunch variations. Now, one common mistake here with rectus abdominis training that is so common is people only getting hip flexion. So like I mentioned, the role of the rectus abdominis is spinal flexion. So basically think rounding your spine. Now, a lot of times what you'll see, if you think of someone doing like a hanging leg raise, basically what that means is, again, we want, even in that, we want our spine to be rounding. So like in a hanging leg raise, what should be going on is we shouldn't actually be getting a huge amount of movement like at our hips, right? So a lot of times what you'll see is people aren't actually rounding or bending at their spine at all. They're only bending at their hips. They're pulling their knees straight up. Their torso is staying completely still and they're only moving at the hips. Where really what should be going on is much more almost like we're tucking and pulling that pelvis up around and like kind of arcing your pelvis up, and your spine will actually be moving and rounding. And this is, I typically just call this a cigar hammer to kind of separate it from a hanging leg raise. But if we do it like that, it's so much harder. But again, most people, like when they're trying to train this, they're literally only moving on the hips. Their spine isn't actually flexing. So again, we're really just training hip flexion. We're not actually training the abs very well. That's so common. Like the cable crunch is one of the hardest movements, I think. Like yeah. Almost always, it's like, I got to get form videos of this. And it takes a couple of weeks to typically get clients to master this because people just aren't used to rounding of the spine when they're doing that movement. They're typically just pushing their hips back and forward. And again, just flexing on the hips rather than out of the spine. Any other common mistakes you can think of, like with rectus abdominis training, before we get into our favorite movements?
Yeah. I mean, when you're doing that hanging leg raise, for example, or the cable crunches and just folding at the hips, that's a similar issue as what you said before with the plank, where you're going to feel it in your abs, which is why I think it's such a common mistake, is when you lift your legs up and you're just working your hip flexors, you do feel your abs burning, but because you're not actually shortening the tissue and getting your ribs closer to your pelvis or vice versa, you're not going through that shortening cycle. So I think that that's important just because you're going to feel it. And so it's absolutely really easy to think that that's actually working. But yeah, that's another one that I was going to mention, was the cable crunch, just not doing it in a way that rounds your spine whatsoever. And just sort of like sticking your butt backwards and sitting on your heels and then coming back forward. That's typically what I'll see with those. So a lot of times I'll try those with clients for maybe a couple weeks, but I'm not really stuck on those because it's just so common to be done wrong. And it's really, if you haven't trained the abs in the correct way, then it's hard to get the hang of that. So if you go and do other movements for a while, really train that to improve just like how that should feel rounding your spine, then you can go back to the cable crunches and do a better job with them. Yeah. But I think that one of the other issues that I'll see with rectus abdominis training is not doing them strictly without swinging. So even doing gar hammer raises a lot of times, or sit-ups or crunches or anything like that, there's just so much momentum where you're swinging your legs up or swinging your upper body up, and then you just kind of flatten out and go back down, versus trying to undo the rounding. Like, think about it as taking your spine down like little by little back to flat, versus just like flopping back down, which is what I'll usually see, because it's way easier to do it that way. Your body naturally wants to do that. Yeah. And then not overloading them properly.
That's what I was gonna say.
Yeah, so many people will just do, I'm gonna do 3 sets of 20 crunches at the end of my leg day for years and years and years, but not actually add any load. And it's just like, if you were to do bicep curls with 15 pounds forever, you're not actually challenging the tissue anymore past the point of just the adaptation to that initial weight.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. So many people look at the abs as something that should be trained so much different than any other muscle, where it's like, I'm going to do sets of 100, I'm going to do 100 crunches, or I'm going to do, again, like we need to consider a proximity to failure here, just like any other muscle. And I don't really think it's that hard to get them close to failure either, but we almost always have to use load, right? That's going to be one of the biggest things. I don't think that like body
with
weight movements,
the rectus abdominis.
With the rectus abdominis specifically, if we're trying to build those, you probably should be loading them. Body weight movements, again, to get close, it's like any other muscle. We need progressive overload over time, and we need to be very close to failure in order to stimulate growth. So if we're missing those aspects, we're just not going to get a ton out of our training, which is also why I really like the cable crunch is, again, like almost always one of my go-tos. Is it's one of the easiest for us to progress for a very long time there. And again, like the guard hammer raises are just so damn hard, typically, if we do them well, that we can progress those for a very long time as well. Anything else to add before we get into favorite movements?
No, let's do it.
Cool. All right. So I would say my favorite movements are going to be a cable crunch, like I've mentioned many times. I also like a Swiss ball crunch because it allows us to not only get that fully crunched position, but also it allows us to extend our spine a little bit at the bottom and actually stretch and lengthen your rectus abdominis a little bit more. I like a decline sit-ups for that exact same reason. We can get a little bit more range of motion than a normal sit-up. I really like guard hammer raises, which I already kind of described. I like the hanging guard hammer raise. We can also just do that in a captain's chair, which is again a thing where kind of looks like a dip machine, but there's going to be a back pad. You basically rest your forearms on the little pads and your legs are just hanging in, and you can do leg raises or guard hammer raises there. I also really like on a decline bench, or you can also do it on an incline bench where we're lying, our head is higher, our hips are lower, and doing a guard hammer raise there. And again, I will, because some of this might be hard to conceptualize with what we're talking about, I'm going to link up a video where I'm demonstrating these in the show notes. So definitely check that out. Just a quick Instagram post, but super easy to reference here. But again, there, rather than just focusing on the hip flexion, like just pulling your hips up towards you, rather again, like really focusing on actually like kind of keeping the same angle in the hips throughout, like your knees relative to your hips aren't moving that much, but we're really just focusing on kind of folding that pelvis up over, almost imagining like we're trying to fold our pelvis up over on top of our spine. I really like those. Before we get into movements we're not so much a fan of, anything else to add for rectus abdominis?
I also really like a crunch machine.
I'm a big fan as well.
Yeah, some of them are better than others, of course, but usually I really like those. There was one at Destination Dallas that's my favorite one I've ever used, and you hook your feet under it, and so your pelvis is coming up and you're crunching down at the same time, and it also let you get some extension in the back. I know you don't love the floor based ones, but I like them with a towel rolled up under your back or an ab mat.
I was going to actually say ab mat crunches. I was going to add that to movements I like.
Yeah. If you have an ab mat, those are great. Or just I'll have people put a towel underneath or a foam roller or something like that. Cause you can get a lot of extension in the back and it's not external resistance, but it is quite a bit harder to do them that way. Cause you're just working in a position that you're not used to. And they're really tough. So I think that, I really like all the other ones that you listed too, but I think that those are the ones that I'll add there.
Yeah. I was going to add an ab mat crunch as well. It's basically like the Swiss ball crunch. I like it for the same reasons. and I can't believe I forgot crunch machines, but I would agree an ab crunch machine. I actually think that's probably, if you have that available, which there's not that, at least there's a lot in commercial gyms, actually. I feel like in the more like the gym I train in, there's a not actually, which I'm kind of surprised by. But if you get a good one, I think that's actually the best option because even like a cable crunch, a lot of times it's people like my grips giving out, where I think that's the easiest way to actually train to failure and progressive overload over time. I'm not a fan of floor-based crunches, as Andrea mentioned, simply because we just don't get as much range of motion, right? Where again, we're kind of already starting where we're relatively close to the crunch position. We get in that short position just a bit, but again, it's like we don't really get as much of a lengthened or like stretch the abs as much at the bottom of the movement. So I really like the ab mat, a Swiss ball crunch, even like putting the towel under you or a cable crunch, and then knee raises and straight leg raises. And now these can be good if we're doing them properly, but again, most people are just getting hip flexion rather than spinal flexion. And again, basically just working the hip flexors there. All right, next up, training the obliques. So The oblique muscles run more diagonally across the torso than the rectus abdominis. So almost again, think of them like kind of running downward at an angle. And they're going to help with things like bending to the side and rotating. So for example, think trying to pull your shoulders to the opposite hip. Now to train these effectively, we'll likely want to be doing movements where we have a bit more downward chopping motion, where we're essentially pulling a cable downward towards the opposite hip. But again, any movement where we're side bending or rotating will still train the obliques. I don't have a ton to say here. Anything else to add on obliques before we get into movements?
Do you train your obliques?
No. There have been times where it's like, I would love to have the jacked obliques, and I've done it for like a week, and then I was like, it's kind of like training calves for me, I feel like. And I'll say, like, similarly, I think it's not very common at all that we will program oblique training where, again, like from a stability perspective, these will be trained well when we're doing our compound movements still, right? I have my client Phil is one person I've worked with where he specifically has wanted to develop his obliques more to where there we've programmed it in. But honestly, there have been very few instances where I even program in specific oblique training, because again, we get the stability aspects without like specific training there. So Again, unless it's like something that someone wants to build. And that's what, have you ever like worked with a coach where they program oblique work for you either?
No.
I haven't either. anything else to add there?
Which is why I haven't done it in so long. But yeah, I could only see for our purposes. So we're not really training athletes for a sport or anything like that. I could see adding in some oblique training in those sort of situations where there's a lot of dynamic movement and maybe twisting from side to side, moving side to side. But yeah, for our purposes, we just don't tend to use them much. But I do like the options that you listed for favorite movements there.
And I think there's some value there. And again, I have still programmed it a bit, but it's just not very common. Unless it's a specific want for someone and it makes sense with the trade-offs that they have as well. Because a lot of times in coaching also, it'll be like, I want to build my obliques and my lats and my quads and my glutes and my delts. Right. And it's like, hey, okay, we have to like choose an order of priorities. And if we chase all rabbits, we don't catch any. But I'll say my favorite movements for obliques are going to be a cable external oblique crunch, a cable internal oblique crunch, and a hanging internal oblique chop. And then I also like a cable chop. I think like for the aesthetic purposes, a cable chop, like performance, it's effective. I think it can be pretty hard to coach well. So I do like the crunch variations a little bit better just because they're simpler for people to grasp, like chop and like actually trying to do it well with like so much we have to do with like our foot position or stability. And like basically have to be very intentional with what we're doing with our entire body is just a little bit harder to coach versus the crunch variations.
Yeah. There's also some machines for obliques where you like keep your upper body or your torso from here up pretty, well, from ribs up pretty stable. Mm-hmm. And then your knees you, like, twist are your hips. In a rotator. Yeah. Yeah. So that one can be okay too if you want to focus on overloading them. But that depends on the machine. Some of them are going to be good and some of them are going to just kind of be awkward. So
yeah. And the thing with that is like, I still think that's a good option where I also think it's easy for us to get like a little bit too carried away. But if we're looking at like that, we're not going to be shortening the fiber, like ideally to like shorten and lengthen, we would also be crunching down to an extent where we're not there. But again, I think that's like it's so easy to just take that too far. And I think like you getting stronger and overloading that, it can still definitely be a great option to build your obliques.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Finally, we have training the transverse abdominis or the TVA. Now, the primary role of your TVA is to stabilize the spine and draw the midsection in towards the spine. Now, we primarily train the TVA with static hold movements like planks and with stomach vacuums. Favorite, anything to add to TVA before we like kind of get into favorite movements, actually?
People will call this like your internal corset, because if you have a really strong TVA, then it helps draw your waist in a bit. And also, people with a very well-trained TVA, they won't have quite as much of the like protrusion in their core as you go along through the day, like as your stomach gets more full, because your TVA does the job of holding that in.
Yeah.
And I know absolutely. That we're going to talk about pregnancy, but obviously that gets stretched out during pregnancy. So we'll talk a lot about that in a sec.
But again, this is really going to be like what's going to stabilize your core the most from like a preventing back pain, stabilizing your pelvis. This is going to be like the most important aspect of that. And that's often overlooked, but again, it's important to understand here. Again, we train this mostly with static hold movements, right? There's other options, but again, those are typically going to be the best options. So like the way we train this now, we will still train, like when we're training rectus abdominis, we can do both at once, but we can still kind of separate the training of the two to an extent. Personally, I would say my favorite movements to train the TVA. I like an ab wheel when we're doing it properly. A lot of people, the ab wheel is similar to the cable crunch, I would say, is one that's kind of hard or even harder for people to get down. Really, like what the ab wheel should be is at the start, we're trying to like kind of pull ourselves into that position of spinal flexion. We're actually rounding our back and trying to, how I coach this is I want you to try to keep your rib cage as close to your pelvis as possible. And as you are rolling out, basically we're just creating a longer lever. Well, you're still trying to maintain that crunch position and you're basically just rotating at your shoulder joint. And it should be harder and harder for you to hold that position, right? So it's not like a, people kind of think of it as like, I'm doing a crunch, or I don't know what people think about actually when they're doing it. It typically just look, it doesn't look like what it should be typically. But that's really where we should think of it as almost like it's like a plank, right? If we're doing a plank correctly, we're really fighting to maintain that position. And you rolling out is almost like someone like pushing against your chest, trying to pull your rib cage and your pelvis out of that crunch position. You're really fighting to maintain that, right? So an ab wheel is almost like, if we do it properly, it's almost like a progression of a plank. But again, most people don't understand that and don't do it correctly. A TVA crunch is another very good option there, where again, we're also going to be kind of training the rectus abdominis. A long lever pelvic tuck plank, this is another very good one. The thing with planks is a lot of people just don't do them correctly. We'll talk about that in a moment as well. But here we're very active about, basically your elbows will be a little bit further forward than they would be in a plank. They'll typically be like kind of under your nose or your eyes. So we have just a longer lever there. So again, it just makes this a little bit more challenging for your core, really focusing on squeezing our glutes. And rather than just kind of passively hanging out in that, I always coach people like, we want to create as much tension here as possible. I want you to imagine, I don't want your forearms actually moving, but imagine you're kind of trying to traction your forearms down into the ground. And imagine you're trying to rotate the earth back towards your hips, right? Where we want to create it, and also squeezing your glutes as hard as you can and keeping your rib cage tucked down, right? We don't want to let our hips fall forward to where we're like extending our spine a bit. We want to really very actively try to create tension there. And that's again, like with the TVA training, one of the biggest mistakes most people make is like, oh, I'm going to go hold a 2-minute plank, right? And it's like, we're kind of just hanging out there. We're not actually focusing on like how our rib cage is positioned, squeezing our glutes, anything of the sort. It's kind of just passively hanging out there. Again, that's not going to do much to progress or strengthen this. If we're doing it properly, it should be very hard by like 30 seconds plus, but it shouldn't just be again like something we can hold for 5 minutes if we're doing it well. But I digress. Other movements I like for the TVA are going to be stomach vacuums, Pavlov presses. And there are lots of other good movements here that we didn't include. There's, for core stability, there's tons of options. But I also actually really like a barbell suitcase hold. So with this, typically I'll have someone set this up as like set the safety arms in the rack very low. Typically we'll use a wrist strap, load up a barbell, and just like, you should only have to pick it up like 3 inches, but just on one side, just pick that up, right? And then we're really fighting to like resist us crunching to the side towards that barbell. It's of course going to train our obliques isometrically, but a very good stability movement. Again, I think a lot of times with these movements, it's like, how do we overload this and actually make it hard? And that's, again, I think one of the best ways I found to do so. You could actually also do that in like a Smith machine. I know that sounds like blasphemy, like training stability in a Smith machine, but that is a good way to overload that. Anything else as far as movements to add there before we talk about movements we're not a huge fan of?
No movements to add, but I do want to add on the TVA crunches. The thing that differentiates those versus just a crunch on a Swiss ball is you're rounding your back backward over the ball. And then as you come up, you're exhaling forcefully, and that helps activate your TVA. You come up to where you're flat first, and then you do sort of like a micro crunch with your ribs and at the same time tucking your pelvis. So you're not rounding your spine quite as much forward to really flex with the rectus abdominis. It's more like coming up almost into the plank position, but inverted on a ball. And the difference there is you have that forceful exhale and you also get the extension in the back.
Okay. Yeah. I will say personally, that's probably like one of the hardest ones for me to master. That one's so frustrating. I would say I'm not a huge fan of loaded carries for most people.
Yeah.
I think when done well, loaded carries can be great for training core stability, but most people, how they do loaded carries is just like, I'm going to grab the 15 pound dumbbells and walk for like 20 to 30 seconds. And again, it's, we actually need to challenge the muscle in order to like stimulate change. There needs to be a large enough stressor to signal to your body that we need to adapt and grow. And again, like a lot of times it's just like, I'm using a very light weight or my grip is giving out well before my core. So I think that again, like in theory, I think loaded carries are great. And like how like strongmen do loaded carries, like legit strongmen do loaded carries, definitely is great. But I think how like most gym pop people, or even like when you look at the YouTube videos and it's like, this person carried a 30 pound kettlebell and it's like this jack dude, like, is that really going to do very much? Let's get into another consideration though, which is definitely more in your wheelhouse, which is core training postpartum. So can you kind of talk through the issues you typically see postpartum with the core, maybe some favorite movements and kind of how we progress these over time?
Yeah. So when you're pregnant, obviously the baby and everything associated is stretching out your core. And the thing that takes the most damage is going to be your TVA. So during pregnancy, you have a separation between your rectus abdominis to allow for some stretching. That's natural. So it's diastasis recti, but normally afterward, it goes back to normal. Sometimes like with me, it doesn't go back to normal and you have to do some rehab work afterward to help get that, get the strength back in those, in the space in between your rectus abdominis. But, for some people that means that that gap will close. For me, mine actually hasn't closed. I still have like a couple fingers width gap in between my abs, but good strength. Yeah. But good strength and everything, there.
You ever just like accidentally poke yourself in your organs?
No.
Okay, good.
So with the, because of that stretch, your TVA is going to be weaker afterward and you have to train that to regain strength. Just like if you were to hold your bicep in a stretch position for 9 months, once you start flexing that arm again, it's going to be pretty weak at first. So really the movements aren't going to be too different, but you want to start with the ones that are going to be way on the easier side. So, I will also add, dead bugs to that list. That's one that I use a ton. So you're keeping your core static, but you're moving your limbs in and out. You can start by just using your legs to regress it. So you're laying on the floor with your, so you're laying on your back with your hands and knees up in a tabletop position. And then you just drop your toes one, like on each foot, one at a time. I said that in a weird way. You're like dropping each foot one at a time to tap the floor and your TVA has to do the work to stay in a flat back position rather than letting your ribs and hips flare up. So that's another one that I really like to train the core postpartum because it's pretty regressed. It can still be difficult for somebody who has a strong TVA and hasn't had any babies. It's just all about the intention that you do them with. But then from there, you can progress those by adding a band that's anchored behind you with your dead bugs and hold that in like a band pullover position. So it's firing your lats while you drop your feet down. And then you can add moving your arms in the dead bug. From there, you can go into some of the movements that we've listed out here, like the LLPT planks and the TVA crunches. So with TVA, you're not going to add load like you will with your rectus abdominis. It's more that you're just going to progress from easier movements toward more difficult movements over time. Does that make sense?
No, that makes complete sense. And it sounds like in this situation, like when you're first starting with someone postpartum, you're definitely focusing on these more regressed TVA movements and probably not doing like any rectus abdominis work for a while. Is that right?
No, because if you, well, it depends on if you have abdominal separation. So if you're someone that your abs just go right back to normal afterward, then you're good to jump into flexion exercises. It's not going to hurt you. But I saw an example of how to explain what a crunch does when you have diastasis. It's like if you have a zip up jacket, but you're only holding like the top and the bottom together. Whenever you like crunch together, it pushes that fabric and the middle that's not zipped up, like comes apart. It's like adding that pressure makes the abs expand and it can worsen your diastasis. So yeah, if you still have that issue and you haven't regained strength, then you want to take care of that first before you add anything with load, especially. But if you work on these TVA exercises for a while, then you can regain that tension beneath the top layer of your abs, and then you're good to train. But if you don't work on your TVA strength postpartum, some things that you'll notice are like low back pain, or your TVA and everything in your core is also working synergistically with your pelvic floor. So if your core is not strong, usually your pelvic floor also isn't strong, and you can have like leakage if you jump or things like that. Like you pee your pants a little bit.
So, I've noticed that every time I'm around you, you always pee your pants. That's not true for the listeners. I'm sorry. Go on.
No, with heavy deadlifts or jumps or things like that, a weak pelvic floor, like you're gonna not be able to hold your bladder. So, yeah, that and like I said, the back pain, those are going to be the most common issues that you'll find if you don't regain that strength postpartum.
And it truly is such a common thing. I was talking about actually one of your clients who works with a lot of women on this specifically, about this thing, this specific thing, where it is so crazy how little like information and education there is out there for women postpartum, where almost every mom we work with is like, yeah, ever since I've had kids, be that a year ago or 15 years ago,
yeah,
my core has just like never been the same. My back always hurts. And again, like when we're intelligent about it, and this is almost always something that I divert to you because you're so good with this through working through it with yourself and so many clients now. But again, I don't think it's like, it can definitely be so much better, but again, it just takes intention there. So let's wrap things up with a few common questions. First being, do we really need to directly train our abs? Because again, you'll hear a lot of people say doing compound movements is plenty to build your abs. You don't really need to do any direct core work, or abs are made in the kitchen. You simply need to get leaner to make them visible. Now, our abs do work a lot isometrically when we're doing compound movements again. So, from like a TVA perspective, like the stability muscles, for a lot of people, if we don't have pre-existing issues or we don't see like glaring issues here, we might not need to do any stability work, right? So like that oblique work, that TVA work, like we mentioned, we might not need to do that. And even like for the rectus abdominis, that will still help stabilize. And I think that stimulus for most people is enough to maintain what you have currently. Now, similarly, for many clients with limited time, the time investment to train abs likely won't be worth the trade-off we get from instead focusing on other muscle groups. So it might not make sense to spend any time focused on direct core work. For detrained or newbie lifters, their core will still get stronger and more stable simply from training the compound movements. So again, for most people training like just 3 days a week, if it's like that's your limited time, the unlimited amount of time you have, we're going to get much better bang for our buck elsewhere. And we're probably not going to focus on a lot of core work unless we see it, or maybe any, unless we see it being an issue. Because again, still just like training your hack squats, your RDLs, those are still going to strengthen your core. But to actually experience ab growth and build thicker, more muscular abs, we need to train them through a relatively full range of motion, just like any muscle group. So direct training is often required to make them bigger. Now, to the second point, again, about abs being made in the kitchen, no matter how thick and muscular your abs are, you won't often be able to see them until you get lean enough. And we can lose body fat much quicker than we can build muscle. So for someone on a quest for visible abs, it does still make sense to prioritize nutrition over doing a huge amount of ab work. And no matter what, I don't think we need a crazy amount here. Next up, unless you have anything to add there.
No, I'll usually program abs maybe 1 to 2 movements twice per week. Yeah. Again,
we'll talk about volume here in just a second also.
Okay. Jumping ahead of myself.
Next, do we need to train all the functions of the abs? Again, we talked about your obliques, your rectus abdominis, your TVA, stability versus aesthetics. Now, this will again largely depend on the answer to the question, what are the client's goals and weaknesses, right? Because the reality is when it comes to training for the muscles involved in core stability, so like your obliques, your TVA, many clients will get enough work simply training their compound movements. As again, your core will have to do a ton to stabilize the spine and pelvis statically through these movements. Now, like we mentioned, discussing postpartum, for clients that are planning to become pregnant or have recently given birth, or maybe have an abnormally hard time stabilizing their core more, TVA specific work like static hold movements, stomach vacuums, et cetera, makes sense to help improve the client's ability to stabilize the spine, or really help prevent or recover from diastasis recti. But for most clients, you don't seem to have any problem stabilizing or bracing. We typically don't need to program any direct core stability work, as again, we'll work this plenty through a compound lift. So again, if it's like, and this depends on again, where you're at, right? If it's an issue where like, hey, we're experiencing back pain and it really seems like your core strength is a problem, or again, you're recovering from pregnancy, or maybe you are an athlete and we do need a little bit more like quote unquote functional strength here. And the thing is like the chops and things of that nature, which again, isn't very commonly like the type of client that we work with. But okay, maybe that would make more sense. But for most clients where it's like, hey, there's not really an issue here, then again, typically your compound movements will be enough. That said, as most clients will still want to experience some rectus abdominis hypertrophy, we typically will program 1 to 2 rectus abdominis movements per training week. Typically, honestly, a lot of times I'll just go one. I'll typically just do like a cable crunch or a leg raise. But if it's someone where it's like, hey, I really do want to build thicker abs, and for them, they're very much like invested in this. Aesthetics is a big priority for them. They're training 4 to 5 days per week and they're already dialed in on all these other variables. They're more like intermediate to advanced client. I might program both, like something like a crunch and something like a reverse crunch, right? So think like a cable crunch where we're pulling your rib cage closer to pelvis, and think a reverse crunch or a gar hammer where we're pulling your pelvis closer to your rib cage. But again, for most beginner clients with like limited time and training and a limited training volume budget, direct ab work is far from the most important thing. I'd say for most people, it's like, I would put it like one notch above calves, right? Where, well, I mean, shit, calves are still on my lowest notch, like 15 years into this. But in this situation, we'll typically keep direct ab work to 0 to maybe 1 movement per week if it's included at all. But again, for more intermediate or advanced clients focused heavily on aesthetics, we'll be more likely to include 1 to 2 direct rectus abdominis movements in the format that I mentioned before. And again, on the rare occasion, someone really wants to focus on developing the most aesthetic core, we might add 1 oblique movement. But again, I would say that's the most rare out of all of these.
Yeah.
Anything to add before we talk about ab volume?
Mine is very similar, but usually I will do 1 TVA movement and 1 rectus abdominis movement if somebody has the time in their training schedule. And I will try and superset that with something toward the end of the day where it doesn't take a whole lot of core activation. So like a bicep curl, tricep push down, those type of things, or calves. If I have calves in there, then I'll superset it with some ab work because you're not needing to really brace whenever you're working your core, whenever you're working your calves or your arms. You don't really want to do your ab movements earlier on in the workout, because if you tire your core out and then go try and do a squat, even if it's on like a hack squat machine, that's going to end up limiting you, and you want your legs to be the limiting factor there.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's incredibly rare, unless it's someone like, sometimes I will have someone focus on like quote unquote activating, which I don't like that. I don't like that term, but like activating their core with like the McGill Big Three, right? So we're really focusing on practicing the positions that you want to be in to stabilize your core going into like a compound movement, like an RDL, but we don't want to fatigue it to the point where it won't be able to stabilize as well. That's a great point. So finally, how much ab volume do we need to do? AKA, how many hard sets per week do we need to do? Now, I'll say the muscles of the abs seem to hypertrophy or grow very well on relatively low volume when trained properly. I think largely this is just because most people haven't trained them properly.
Yeah.
So thus it's very rare that we'll need more than, I would say, even 6 hard sets for the rectus abdominis per week. And maybe, like, again, if we wanted to grow obliques, like 3 sets, but I would say it's incredibly rare that I go above like 6, like probably 2 movements per across the week, 1 on 2 separate days, and 3 to maybe 4 sets per most. But I don't think I've ever programmed over 8 hard sets. But again, if we're training them properly, training close to failure, that should be more than enough. Anything else to add there before we wrap it up?
No.
Cool. Well, I think this is a great summary of how to train your core properly for both performance and aesthetics. Hopefully you all found this helpful. As always, if you enjoy the show, do us a huge favor, leave us a 5-star rating and review. If you want to apply to work with our team, just click the link in the show notes. And again, as I mentioned, there will be some resources, some videos to demonstrate kind of everything we talked about here, specifically with the rectus abdominis and how to train that properly, to just kind of help you visualize that as well. Those are linked up in the show notes. And as always, we appreciate you guys tuning in, and we will catch you all next time.